Welcome to the Monster Club, an honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans. Fair warning, you may not have seen this movie. We have spoilers, ho! I am Jethel.
I'm Tuck. Why don't we talk about our recent movie-going experience with another
movie. It's been several weeks since we put anything out. Of course, the holiday season was upon us, among other things, and sickness and stuff like that. So, I understand you went to go see a small independent movie that's not doing too well in the movie theaters right now.
Yeah, it's a science fiction opera thing. You might have heard of it.
What is this? Hold on a second. So
I went to go see Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yes.
Me and my buddy and his kid who was visiting for Christmas. And I planned it all out ahead of time. I bought the tickets online, and we went to our favorite movie theater. I mean, the online ticketing, online ticket sales thing is so good. You could even select which seats you want.
In certain theaters, none of the ones around here will allow for seating. So
yeah, well, the one near us does, and I was so happy at this. So I selected the perfect seats and everything, paid for them ahead of time. We went out to go see it.
All right.
And we were just in time to get to the movie as the previews were starting.
Except that's a mistake right there. I never show up any later than a half an hour before a movie starts. And in case of Star Wars, I showed up an hour and a half early.
Well, we figured, you know, we had reserved seats. There wasn't going to be a seating problem.
All right. Well, continue on.
We really weren't feeling, you know, I wanted to get soda and popcorn.
Right.
And I figured, okay, you know, previews are just starting. So I am like you. If I'm driving, I try to get there, you know, at least 20, 30 minutes ahead of time. So I have time to, you know, pick out what I want to eat and get my popcorn and my soda and everything.
But hey, previews are just starting, so you know you got at least an hour and a half. Good God, what's going on with these trailers lately?
At least 10 or 15 minutes. So we get there, and there's like this huge line for the kiosk. You know, the little automated teller machine kiosk where you get your tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, crap, why don't we go inside and see if they can print us out at the back desk behind the box office. No one was there, and so we stood back in line for the kiosk, and we finally got our tickets after everyone stopped, you know, took up so much time futzing with the machine, you know, because no one knows how to use that thing, you know. It seems like every time I order tickets that way, everyone who's in front of me in line, that's their first time using anything with a touch screen.
Geez.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, so we finally get our tickets. Well, no, we don't get our tickets.
Hmm?
Something else goes funky. Somebody says, no, you can get your tickets inside, you know, and so several people step out of line. We go inside, and I give my paper that I printed out at home to the ticket guy so he can print them out.
Yep.
He looks at it, and he scratches his head for a second. He turns it this way, turns it that way, looks at the second sheet, looks at the first sheet again, and goes, this isn't for this theater.
Oh, no.
Same movie time. Same exact you can pick your seats feature.
Oh, no. Wrong theater.
But for some reason, I had bought from the wrong theater. Now, I'm no newbie to buying things online. But for some reason, I just totally flubbed this. So my friend goes, well, let me see the paper. And he looks at it. He goes, this theater is like 7 minutes from here. Let's go. And so we hop back into the car and drive over to what turns out to be an Alamo theater. You're not familiar with these. Alamo theaters are these neat little theaters where they took out every other row of seats and they replaced them with little tables.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Like, you can order like a beer and nachos.
We have something like that around here. It's called a Cinnabar.
Yeah,
I haven't been to it, but I've heard about it.
It's good if you want to just relax, have some snacks, or a meal of middling quality, and you know, you know, some suds and watch a movie that you maybe you've seen already, you know. The really great thing about it is little kids aren't allowed at all.
Ooh,
because
nice.
They serve alcohol. They have an alcohol license, so you can't have kids under a certain age there.
I like it.
So we go in, and they have this policy because they have all these tables and everything, and they try not, you know, there's not a lot of room for people to get up and get back in their seats. And so most people just sit in the theater for the duration of the movie. But they don't want to disturb anybody. It's already sitting. So if you arrive any less than 5 minutes before the movie starts, then there's a good possibility that you will be refused.
Ooh.
You will be they will decline to seat you. But we got there just as the previews were ending. We stood in the dark kind of trying to figure out where our seats were. And then finally someone came and helped us, and we finally got into our seats as the title scroll was going up. You know, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
the story thing. Unfortunately, now to give you context about how awful this was, the theater that we were intending to go to was an AMC theater where they had recently upgraded all the seats.
Right.
Every seat was a Easy Boy.
Ooh.
A padded leather, really luxurious with cup holders, Easy Boy. Every
nice.
Single seat. This was primo, super duper quality movie theater. And I was so looking forward to that because as an individual of considerable size, I know you're familiar with what this is like. You go into a theater, it's maybe a little bit older, and you got to swing up at least one of those arms if they swing up.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the seats in the Alamo Theater were quite a bit older.
Uh-oh.
And there wasn't sufficient room between the seats in front and the tables, so I kind of had to scoot sideways, and I was bumping seats.
Oh, no.
Oh, man, it was terrible. So we finally got into our seats, squeezed into mine, and, you know, and I was out of breath, and my heart was pounding because we were rushing, and
right.
I was just so embarrassed to be, like, blocking everybody, you know, when I was trying to get into my seat and everything. And I didn't even get a chance to read the title scroll, you know, before I finally found my 3D glasses and put them on.
What? You didn't get to read the title scroll? Well, you missed major plot points.
Yeah, right.
like stuff. Anyway.
Story's pretty simple. Bad guys are doing bad things, and the good people are doing good things. Let's see what the good people are.
It's fucking
Star Wars. So 20 minutes in, the worst thing that could possibly happen happened.
The girl in the balcony above you peed.
No, my bladder decided to fill.
No!
And for the rest of the movie, I was in excruciating pain, but I didn't want to leave because I'd missed the movie and it would be such a struggle to get past all those freaking seats to my left. And
that's why I hit the bathroom right before I go into any
theater. Oh, we didn't have time. And the worst thing is that I finally couldn't stand it. And I just struggled through it. And I, excuse me. And I got my way out and I said, okay. Finally, you know, went to the bathroom, much relief. Came back and said, okay, I'll just stand against the wall, watch the rest of the film from the wall.
And you came back just in time to see Han Solo falling off the edge.
As I lean against the wall to just, you know, stay out of the way and watch the rest of the movie, because I was so sure by that point there was only a couple of minutes left, I realized I'd left my 3D glasses
on
my seat. So there was that. So I struggle struggle to squeeze back into my seat, scooting past all those people. And then the film had 8 minutes left. 8 minutes.
Everyone behind you is like, come on!
Pretty much. I heard a lot of disgruntled, oh, God, you know. And there was only a couple of minutes left. And I was like, well, shit, I could have waited. But it was just so freaking bad. So me and my friend, we said, we're going to go see it properly again soon.
And don't pay the extra for the 3D. The 3D wasn't that impressive.
Yeah, it really wasn't. I think it kind of ruins films for me, you know. But I wanted to see it in 3D because I thought surely they're going to do a. I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't. You know,
I saw it both ways. I saw it once in 2D, once in 3D, and it wasn't worth the extra $3.
Yeah. So yeah, we're gonna go see it properly in that nice theater with the nice chairs in 2D. Nice. Hopefully the 2D will still be available when we decide to go see it again.
Now here's what you got to do: see if they take Fandango for online ordering. You probably won't be able to choose your seating.
Oh no, that's how I did it.
Oh, you did? Okay, I was gonna say because Fandango will allow you to cancel the sale if you miss the show.
Well, they will if you. Within a certain number of minutes of the beginning of the show, but since it's reserved seating, you know, movie had already started, it was because then you've deprived somebody else of those seats, so they're going to take your ticket money. So that was not the ideal experience, and I have to say, I probably missed a lot of stuff in the movie because I was in such discomfort about the film.
If we lived closer, I'd take you. But it's kind of hard. We're like 1500 miles away.
Yeah, come on, drive down, man.
Oh yeah, just an afternoon jaunt, no problem.
We need to get those teleporters going, damn it.
I know, this is... right?
Okay, so what was your experience like? You said you didn't like the 3D.
Much better than yours, unfortunately.
Everybody's experience was better. I mean, there's not a whole lot you could do to make mine worse than it was.
I will say that I completely appreciated the fact that enough people really wanted to see this movie where they shut the fuck up.
Yes.
It was silent in the theater, and I appreciated that so much. I was so worried, you know.
Parts where you're supposed to.
Liz and I got there, like... You know, they let us in like 45 minutes before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We get there. I got the perfect fucking seats. I mean, I can judge.
Sweet spot seats, yeah.
Right. I mean, I can judge from my peripheral vision, the rims of my glasses, where the center of the screen is.
Yeah.
And that's where I sit.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to the movie theater ahead of time so I can sit there. So I was like the 10th person in line when we to get in. Mm-hmm. I rushed up because Liz has a cane. She has hip problems, so she lets me rush ahead and get the seats we want first, which is great. And we got there. I put my stuff down. I help her to her seat, blah, blah, blah. And I'm carrying the concession stuff too. But
we sit down. Surely you go back for that after you... secure the
I don't seat. Trust anyone to not take my seat. So anyway, so
she's sitting there.
So we're sitting there, and then people start straggling in. Like, you know, we did a morning matinee, so I wasn't expecting it to be full.
Okay.
I did it a Monday morning. It's like, people are at work. I'm not concerned about this being a full house. And then 5 minutes before the fucking movie starts, everyone starts piling in. I'm like, really, guys?
At least you got
I'm sitting here. I'm relaxed. I'm trying to
enjoy the slideshow of local businesses.
Yeah, I'm trying to get myself situated, and everyone's just piling in. I mean, it was just a wave of people. It wasn't full by by any stretch of the means, but still, it's like, really, you show up 5 minutes before the fucking movie starts, and everyone's looking at my seat, and everyone's complaining that they're off to the side and stuff like that. And I just lean over to Liz, and I'm just like, you know, this is why I show up a half an hour before a movie. If they're complaining about their seats, maybe not show up 5 minutes ahead of time. You know what I mean? Oh, God. But anyway, yeah, as soon as the Star Wars, whatever, everyone shut the fuck up, and we watched the movie. And I think there was like one person who was like had their cell phone out, and I threw some popcorn at them.
Nice.
Just a little handful. I waited for a dark scene in space or something like that, and just whipped a little popcorn at them.
Nice.
I really wish sometimes we have the ability to point our cell phones at someone and instantly send them a message. You know what I mean?
That would be fun, yeah.
In some situations, that would be really fun, but it would be, you know, harassment and shit like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, being able to point my cell phone at someone, shut off your fucking phone.
Of course, that would be kind of hypocritical.
Yeah, true.
Seeing as how you had to use your phone to, yeah.
You know,
I don't even like it when people have their phones on vibrate and then check them during the theater.
Oh,
those,
yeah.
Those
turn
freaking
off that fucking light, man.
Jeez, it's like a freaking, everyone has their brightness turned up to full, and they wonder why their batteries don't last.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? But yeah, we had a good time. It was a good experience.
Good, good.
I told Liz on the way out, like, you know, I should really just yell out, oh my God, Chewbacca gets swallowed by the Sarnak!
Sarnak?
Yeah, Sarlacc. The Sarlacc pit from...
No, it's funnier if you mispronounce it.
That would be so fucking funny. It's just a false spoiler like we did in our last little bit a couple of weeks ago. Oh my God, Chewbacca punches Palpatine in the nuts. But, you know, you gotta make it sound realistic, though, so people are like, oh, come on!
Right.
It's like, you know, if George Lucas did this thing, Luke Skywalker wouldn't have done that backflip off the ledge to catch his lightsaber as being thrown by C-3PO with his new cybernetic red arm. By the way, okay, we're going to go into a little Star Wars thing.
Okay.
We're going to go into a little Star Wars thing, and if I have to, I'll just break it up. You know, it's like, this is our thoughts on Star Wars, and then our actual movie.
Right.
What the fuck was with the red arm? It's not explained. He makes a point to point it out. Oh, Han Solo, perhaps you recognize me. I am C-3PO. Maybe you didn't recognize me with my red arm. And then nothing else is said about it.
C-3PO has always been a kind of a prissy robot. I would think he would be self-conscious about a mismatched arm. And the mismatched arm is the only way to show that time has passed for him.
But in the next scene he's in, it's fixed!
Nah.
Yes.
He always has the red arm.
No. Toward the end of the movie, he has a regular arm again. It's just like, what happened? Why did he have the red arm?
I didn't notice it.
See what happens when you go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
No, his arm was fixed by the end of the movie. And it's like, well, he doesn't have a red arm anymore. What was with the red arm? Was it magic?
I'll tell you what the red arm was for.
What was it for? Okay. A red herring?
Merchandising. Ooh. You can't sell a C-3PO version of The Force Awakens.
We can't keep selling,
you know what
the
I mean?
C-3PO.
Force Awakens versions of C-3PO without a freaking red arm. He has to be slightly different.
I get your point. I get it.
He has
it.
To. And Star Wars has always been about merchandising. That's the brilliance of it.
Oh,
you can merchandise every single little background character. It doesn't matter how obscure.
Oh, you know, except for Rey, apparently, who didn't show up in any of the box sets.
What the hell? Why? That pisses me off. First,
she's the main character of the fucking movie.
You're going to edit out all these uhs, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Hang on a sec. It's coming to me. Just help me remind me. Who's the female character in the Avengers movies?
Black Widow.
Okay. So it's just like with Black Widow and the Avengers merchandise. She was just missing. There were all these hilarious photos of these like little girls holding up, you know, boxes of the Avengers superheroes. And they're like, where is Black Widow? She's just gone. And there was this scene in one of the movies where Black Widow drops out of like a helicopter or a halo carrier or something on a motorcycle with, you know, it's shooting guns and everything. And she's like so freaking badass. The toy version of that features Captain America. Black Widow's nowhere to be found. So, yeah, I do think there's this tendency in the toy industry to...
Action figures are for boys. They don't want to see Black Widow.
And you know what?
Make that,
yes, they make that, do. Apparently.
Make that outfit removable and they'll want it.
Not even, just show a decent amount of curvature, cleavage or something. But maybe that's what they're worried about. They're worried about a character that is being, but Rey wasn't sexualized at all. Not at all. You know? And
if nothing else, Finn was the woman. And what fuck happened to Captain Phasma? She looks so badass.
She'll be prominent in future movies, I promise you. I would not be surprised if she got her own spinoff. You know, Boba Fett barely had any lines in the classic trilogy, barely anything. But he's still one of the most badass characters from those films. So give it a little bit, but look to see, you know, Captain Phasma get kind of a Boba Fett kind of reputation is.
But the problem is she had a Boba Fett reputation before the movie came out.
Yeah.
All of the trailers featured her. Mm-hmm. She was made out to be the big badass of the whole fucking movie, and she barely had 5 lines of dialogue.
If that.
And 5 minutes of footage.
Yeah. So I that was a little disappointing, but I think they've just, this first movie, they're laying groundwork. They're laying backstory, you know, for this new run of movies.
And where is she now? She's in a trash compactor.
Which is funny. You gotta admit, that's funny.
It is.
I bet you the whole reason Finn is from sanitation is for that joke.
Probably, yeah.
It's the whole reason for it.
Of course, the biggest complaint of the Star Wars movie is the same complaint every reviewer that I've heard on podcasts or read is saying, and that's it follows the New Hope.
It does echo a lot of familiar story points.
Way too much.
On
my review at Cinema Unrest, let me bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? Where the fuck is it? Oh, come on now. There it is. Whoop, nope. That's our fake spoiler thing.
You know, I just realized that the title of this movie is just wide open for a new Spaceballs parody.
Oh, yeah.
They should call it Spaceballs, The Farce Awakens.
There you go.
Okay, so
this is my timeline. My timeline description. Young person on a desert planet finds himself in cahoots with the rebellion and is strong with the Force. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Desert planet. Mm-hmm. Couldn't be a regular old Earth-like planet or a swamp, could it? Discord between father and son. A ruler who seduces a powerful young Jedi to the dark side. Mm-hmm. New Sith betrays their teacher and kills all the Padawans. Top Sith wears a mask.
Where does that match up? New Sith.
Well, that would be with Episode 3.
Okay.
Well, the whole thing with Kylo Ren killing all of Luke's Padawans
echoes
Anakin Skywalker's turn to the dark side. Mm-hmm. Let's see here.
Top Sith wears
a mask. Older mentor-like character killed in dramatic fashion, and another larger Death Star to destroy. There's just way too many similarities with the past movies. This was not an original story. This was a "We know this works. Let's reboot the series with these common themes."
Oh, please don't use that word. Don't use that word.
What's that?
Reboot. Reboot is only for when
revive.
Okay, continue. I like to use the word. It's a continuation of the original stories.
And now the continuing story of a Jedi who's gone to the dogs.
I get what you're saying, but I would argue that all the archetypal stories have been told, that you will never be able to tell a story that does not have some similarities with the previous story. And I think that they kind of had to do this to, you know, rope in the feel of the first movie, but shuffle the cards a bit as to who is playing what roles. And I think this is something that we find that is true in life. You know, where a son grows up with a certain relationship with his father. And then when he's, you know, older and has a son of his own, he suddenly finds echoes of those childhood memories reoccurring between him and his own son. He's like, "Oh, I'm the father now. Now look at this. I see the other side of it now. And the same things are happening here." Mm-hmm. You know, so this is the kind of thing that happens in life. And I think it's still a good story. Is it a good story? That's what I keep coming back to. Is it a good story? Is it entertaining? Absolutely.
It was good. It was entertaining. I wish it would have been more unique.
Yeah.
More original. I think that's what everyone... I think that's the only real complaint with the movie, is that it wasn't really an original story. It was a retelling of the old story.
It was a reshuffling of the tropes of the original story.
Now let's talk about spoiled brat Kylo Ren and his temper tantrums. What the fuck? I'm here thinking, yes, Kylo's going to be this great, freaking this powerful new Sith and stuff like that. He's throwing a temper tantrum. What is he, 12?
I have seen some great, like little GIFs and little memes and stuff that center around Kylo Ren being like a spoiled, you know.
I'm going to be completely honest. I hope he died. We don't know the fate of our primary characters, with the exception, you know, of our primary bad guys, I should say, because we don't know who got off the planet because the order was given to evacuate. But I hope he didn't make it. I really do, because
I'm sure he did.
We had one emo character in Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, but the difference is the guy playing Kylo Ren, he could act. That's the difference.
Yes, but I don't need another whiny Sith. It's just, he's all like, I'm dark and brooding and rah, 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 rah. What? Something didn't go my way? And he starts slicing up whatever the hell's in front of him.
Mm.
That's all I heard. But the first time around, I was like, oh, this is so fucking cool. And I fanboyed out. The second time around, I started getting critical about it. I started critiquing it. It's like, I really wish I could force choke this bastard.
I would argue that he's not nearly as frustrating and annoying to watch as Anakin was.
Well, at least he can act better than...
what's his name? Right.
as either one of the people that did...
right.
Let's face it. That little shit from the first one and the older one from the other two could not act to save their fucking lives.
I think they just had a bad director. A bad director. And I'll say it. You know what? Lucas lost his way.
He
had a lot of people helping him on the first movie.
Then other directors took over
and the second and third movies, you know, were except for the Ewoks. Okay, that's debatable. But they were still fantastic films. But they didn't suffer from one director getting stuck in his ways and everyone, you know, performing the role of yes men for him and not disagreeing with them. You know, he really needed to have opposing points of view and not everyone just saying, okay, everybody just do as George says. And I think that's what went wrong with the first three films. You cannot have the same director doing three films with no one telling him, you know what, that's probably not
going to happen. Everybody surrounded himself with was just fanboying out. Like, we're doing a Star Wars movie. It's George Lucas directing. Nothing can possibly go wrong. Oh,
yes.
Hail the great Lucas.
Ah, boy.
Good morning, you know, Mr. Lucas. Here's your coffee. Can I lick your boot for you?
Yes, pretty much. And I think that was the problem. He you know, I think the two actors, I don't think the kid from the first film could have done any better.
Jake Lloyd, damn you.
I think he definitely should not have been in the movie. He did not have the feel. He had a look, and that's what George fell in love with.
Well, don't tell me George Lucas fell in love with that young boy. That's wrong.
You know what I'm talking about. But he you know, he really liked the look of the kid for the role. And that was a mistake, not picking somebody who could act. In fact, if you watch some of the, what do you call it, the audition footage for the first, you know, for episode one, they have these two boys that are auditioning for the role. And you can hear George and his main executive producer guy, I can't remember his name.
Who fucking cares?
Talking about, you know, debating about which of these kids, you know, George is like, well, I really like this guy. And he's pointing out Jake Lloyd. And the other guy, the executive producer guy, he's like, well, I don't know, this other kid, he can really act. He goes, nah, I really like the look of this kid. And literally said that. And that's, and
this
that's
is Star right Wars, not a porno. You don't go for looks.
Exactly. You know, I mean, if the actor is good enough, they will look right for the part, yeah. You know, and it's not as if it was a predefined look that everyone, you know, is carefully described in books that have been beloved since everyone's childhoods or anything. You know, it's not like they had a could have looked like anybody pretty much, you know? And as for the other guy, what's his name?
Oh God. I've been trying to put him out of my head so much. I forget.
Who cares? That guy, the whiny teen.
Hayden Christensen.
Yes.
You know, he said in a recent interview, he stopped acting because Star Wars gave him such a bad name. No, you can't act. You've been in other things.
I think he can act.
No, I've seen his other movies.
Oh, really?
He sucks. Oh, my God, he's a horrible actor. I'm sorry.
He failed to, I don't know. There are some times when I think, okay, that was pretty good. You know, some scenes. But I don't know. I think it takes a special director to pull out the best in an actor. And he's never had the fortune to be paired with a director that could pull a good performance out of him so that he knew the difference between good acting and bad acting. I don't know. I've heard and read that good acting is the secret to good acting is not acting at all. It's becoming the part and really getting into the mind and emotions of your character so you're actually feeling what they're supposed to be feeling, you know, and then just speak genuinely, you know. But yeah. he was not capable of doing that, and he did not have a director capable of bringing out that from him. The other actors seem to be okay. Maybe that does point to a severe deficit in his acting ability. Because there were plenty of other actors who did.
Putting him with Samuel L. Jackson, Liam Neeson, you know, really good actors just really drove home how bad of an actor he was. Or inexperienced, I guess we can say. Okay.
Okay, right. Enough Star Wars whining.
Okay, enough Star Wars whining. Let's get on to why we're actually here.
The Mist.
The what?
The Mist.
The what?
The Mist.
The Fog 2.0.
The Fog. No, The Fog was about pirates, wasn't it?
Yeah, but what the point I'm making is that wasn't mist. It was a fog.
Okay, so what is mist to you? Mist is fine precipitation, right?
Fine precipitation that's hanging in the air, blah, blah, blah. But you can see through mist. Fog is much denser. Coming from someone who's living in an area that's completely covered in fog most of the time, I can tell you that's not a mist.
Mm.
Okay, but anyway, that's splitting hairs. So, The Mist. Overall, okay. First impressions, I love this movie. I love H.P. Lovecraft. This was very much a Lovecraftian movie.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Definitely had
dimension and not being able, most of the time not being able to see what's attacking you.
Before this movie came out, I had read the novella, so I was very interested because it was part of a larger collection. I can't remember what it was. Dark Forces in 1980, apparently, from Stephen King, and I really loved it. And I wanted to see how they would end it because it ends on such an ambiguous note in the novella. It's pretty much, you know, we've got X amount of gas. We're just going to keep on going, you know, and pray we reach the end, you know, and that's the end of the story. And I always really liked it. I found it a haunting story. So I was excited to see it. You watched it in color this time around, but the director originally intended it to be filmed and shown in black and white.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So when you get it on Blu-ray these days, you probably have one in your Blu-ray thing.
No, I don't have the Blu-ray for it.
Oh, you don't? The Blu-ray comes with a separate disc for you to watch it in black and white. And I gotta say, it is a much different experience.
I may have to check this out.
Yeah. It's not that expensive on Amazon right now. It's like less than $15. It's like $12. And it had, he filmed it on, he didn't film it digitally, even though it was 2007. He filmed it on proper film. And it gave this kind of grainy look to it, and it felt like a really, you know, a really well-made Twilight Zone episode with a high production value and CGI.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah.
It was a little weird watching a black and white movie with CGI, but it was still so well done. So well done. Another thing I really like about the movie is that there's almost no music in the movie. It's very,
very
documentary
quiet.
Style, you know? Mm-hmm. That's something I also like about Castaway with Tom Hanks. There's almost no music in the movie whatsoever.
Having no sound like that gives you a better, a more intense experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of directors and a lot of filmmakers use music to build up their scenes instead of, acting
mm-hmm.
and story.
It's kind of like it props it up. You know, it's a crutch. And you only really notice, it's kind of like music in a movie is, I don't know, it can go one or two ways. I watched a YouTube video that was a cut of all the monster scenes from the movie back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who put the video together just put in this, you know, cinematic, you know, scary music from all kinds of different sources. It just ruined all the scenes just horribly. Yeah. It was just terrible. So I don't know. There's just, I'm a big fan of cinematic music. I love cinematic music, but there are just some movies that just work so much better without it.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. It's kind of like it increases the tension.
Oh yeah. So a government experiment gone wrong.
Military.
Which we learn halfway through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Government experiment gone wrong. They're trying to breach the dimensional border and see what's on the other side. But what was intended to be a window becomes a doorway.
Yeah, I love that.
The scene was written for them to show how it happened. And they had a discussion. It's like, no, let's make it ambiguous. You don't know what this is, and you don't know where it came from. Of course, you know, they explained it halfway through, but still, I thought that was a much better call. Maybe I don't want to know what's attacking me or where it came from. It's just there, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it starts out that way, and I like that better. And I like the vague, you know, ooh, there's a military base up there. I wonder if it's something they did, you know?
Right. Project Arrowhead.
Yeah, the director and writer for this movie who adapted the novella, Frank Darabont, he did write that origin scene, as you described, in which a thunderstorm causes a malfunction at the project's lab and causes it to go awry. But the scene was never filmed because somebody, I can't remember who, asked him, you know, do you really need that scene? Does it move the story along? You know, you could save yourself a whole lot of money. I mean, they have to build the laboratory set and, you know, take
and
time
like
away
I said,
from
think,
the story.
I really think not knowing what was happening really works well for it.
It's kind of like the Hellraiser movies. You know, the box is a whole lot scarier when you don't know where it came from, what its true purpose is, and, you know, and.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is going on? What is its true nature? It's just scary, you know? And the mist monsters are like that. You don't know where they came from, if they're mutations or, you know, they're created in some lab or they're from another world. You don't know, you know?
Yep.
That's what makes them scary.
All right. So, cut tension with a knife. You got a whole bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Most of them are locals, but some of them are out-of-towners.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we say a wide variety of intellectual prowess? In other words, some people are kind of smart. Some people are just dumb hicks. But anyway, they're trapped in a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
As this mist rolls in, and everyone's like, oh, what the hell is that? Oh, that's kind of weird. What the hell? And then this guy comes out of the mist, face, nose bleeding, his shirt has some blood smears on it, stuff like that. And it's like, there's something in the mist! There's something in the mist! A thing! You know, he can't describe what it is. That's actually very Lovecraftian. You're not supposed to be able to describe what mm-hmm. the Lovecraftian monsters actually look like, because they're just, wow, they're just you're out of your mind with, you know, And he gets in, and they lock the doors and stuff like that, and I just love the tension that they bring to this with... They don't show you everything right away, and then things start slowly showing up.
Yeah, I really love capsule movies where you got a bunch of people confined in a finite amount of space, and they can't get out. They're in danger of some kind, and then there's all this friction that starts happening between the various characters. It's a great source of story and drama. That's one of the reasons. One of my alternate titles is Monsters Among Us, mm-hmm. because it turns out some of the most dangerous creatures in the store were the humans.
You know, I was kind of hoping to save it for a little further down on our podcast here, but God damn it, I hate religious zealots. Now, I'm not talking about a specific religion. I'm not saying that every religious person is an asshole. What I'm saying is, when you've lost your sense of, when you've lost your common sense,
mm-hmm.
and you turn to, oh, I am God, you know, come to me, I am the voice of God, I know what's going on, and oh, by the way, we need to kill this person to prevent bad things from happening. Okay, that's where you've crossed the line.
Yeah, I don't think that kind of fanaticism is a feature of religion per se. It's just a feature of people, you know. People are like that occasionally, who will then turn whatever religion happens to be, you know,
right.
prevalent in their area, and then use it for their own twisted ends.
And it really is a real life thing. This is something that happens. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, humanity can never go on and do something like that. Oh, really? Let's talk about Jim Jones. Let's talk about Waco, Texas.
Westboro Baptist Church is a pretty good example.
Westboro Baptist Church. I could easily see this woman being a member of the Westboro Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
Easily see that. You know, we can also talk about extremists, but I'm not going to get political on this. But there are, in every religion, fanatics. Mm-hmm. And this woman just happens to be a Christian fanatic, who is bringing on the book of Revelations. Oh, this is the end times, and you need to do this and that. And at first, everyone thinks she's a wacko, which is the proper response.
Mm-hmm.
And then she starts luring people in.
She takes advantage of their fear, yes. and their anxiety about the situation, and tries to give them something to focus on. And instead of
focusing on, we should be calm, and we should think rationally, and we need to survive. Her way of thinking is, you're all sinners, and you're all going to die, unless you do what I say.
We have to start sacrificing people. She goes really, like, old school, like,
off
you know.
Off the deep fucking end.
We got to start throwing people in the volcano.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, yeah.
Of course, in this case, the volcano is a scary fucking monster that we really don't know what looks like.
All right. I really love how polarizing her character is, how she just turns everybody against the core group of protagonist characters.
Yeah. Oh, you can't leave. What do you mean we can't leave? We don't agree with you and we're just leaving. Nope, won't allow it. You're going to do my rules or nothing at all. And that just comes to my alternative title, Shoot That Bitch. I would not have allowed her to live that long.
Yeah. Well, there's no way that you could kill her earlier than that and not
make yourself
out
right.
to be a... So you want to hear something interesting?
Let me hear something interesting.
Have you ever played Half-Life?
I understand that the novella was the inspiration for Half-Life, but no, yeah. I have not actually seen it.
Yeah, if you're ever curious about what happens at Project Arrowhead, you just play the Half-Life games.
Ooh.
You
is
can
it
get
available
them
on Steam?
Oh, absolutely. Come on, it's a Valve game.
Well, I'm going to have to check it out then.
Yeah, Half-Life and Half-Life 2 are both about a top secret, you know, government lab where scientists open inadvertently a portal to another dimension and all kinds of creatures start leaking through. It is fantastic. It's a great story. So that's cool. I love that. That one form of art inspired another I'm so familiar with. So let's, what should we talk about next? What about the, do you have any more, anything to talk about in the main meat of the movie, the main story?
Not really with the, I love the storyline. It is sufficiently intense.
Mm-hmm.
Monsters are sufficiently creepy. I was
and I
very
I like
impressed.
That all the characters are so uniquely personified. You know what I'm saying? They all have their own feel and flavor to them.
Right.
That they feel like characters from a Stephen King book, which they are.
Yes. And we will discuss the ending toward the end of the podcast here.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. So let's
see. Well, if
that.
You want to, I mean, we have been talking for a while with our Star Wars rant and stuff like that, but everyone
so
that knows me. Everyone that knows me knows I love an unhappy ending.
Mm-hmm.
Big happy ending pisses me off sometimes.
Yeah, I cannot ending. Stand Everybody Lives.
Yeah. I mean, have an unhappy ending where the main protagonist dies or is tragic in some way. It makes it more realistic.
I like it when the main protagonist dies saving a secondary character, and that secondary character who you didn't think was going to make it makes it to the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's sometimes
that's
fun. It depends how it's done. I mean,
yeah,
it's like, oh, you know, it's like, what the hell's the name of that movie? I Am Legend? Will Smith sacrifices himself so the other people can live, and then if you look at the scene, yeah, you didn't have to do that. There was no reason for Will Smith's character to blow himself up at the end of the movie. No reason at all.
There's a couple of different endings to that movie, too.
Yeah.
They filmed a couple of different ones. Those might be worth checking out. I was thinking of the ending to Cube, where the main characters, you know, the main antagonist and protagonist end up killing each other. And then the guy, the autistic guy, I can't ever, Kazam. Is that right? He ends up making it out the door and into the white light, whatever lies past there. It's interesting. So, this movie ended on an unexpectedly dark note. The novella, as I mentioned earlier,
dark note.
The novella ends with the main character talking in first person saying, you know, we've got such and such amount of gas. We're just going to keep going, and here are a couple of nifty, you know, I'm trying to give hope to my son, and la-di-da, you know, and it ended on a very vague note. And I was like, okay, that's great. Very, you know, dramatic and, gosh, I wonder what happened to them kind of feeling. That's good. It was a good ending. I really wanted to see how the movie ended. How did the movie end, Jethel?
In the end of this movie, there are five people in the car and four bullets.
And they run out of gas.
They run out of gas, and they have to make the decision, do we try to stick this out, or do you know, or have we just had enough?
And I love the scene that they have where David Drayton, so he has this gun, he's got four bullets, and he just kind of looks at each adult in the car. His son's asleep in the arms of Amanda Dumfries sitting in the other side, in the passenger side, and the two people in the back seat.
Yeah.
And they just kind of quietly and subtly nod back at him saying, yeah, we're all on the same page here. Oh man. And then the look from his son as his son starts to wake up.
Yeah.
This, the way his eyes just widen and he takes this breath like, and then just,
And then faraway shot of the truck, and you just see the flash and hear the gunshots, pum, 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 pum. And then he's out of bullets, and he's the only one left.
And they don't show – they're very classy about it. There's like a soft focus of the now deceased bodies.
Yeah.
The deceased people in the car. The focus is all on him. And he's just racked with pain and guilt and mourning. He's trying to dry fire this gun into his open mouth, and there's just nothing left. He's just screaming.
Yeah.
Ah, that is acting.
Yes.
Holy fuck, what a scene. What a scene. And then the worst thing, what happens next?
Worst case scenario. He kills everyone, including his toddler son. Well, not toddler. He's like what, eight? Six, five,
nine or ten.
I don't think he's ten. He's probably eight. Including his 8-year-old son. 30 seconds later, the military come by.
Hey, there's this rumbling sound coming out of the mist. He thinks it's a monster. So he gets out of the car and he's all like, come on, what are you waiting for? Just take me out, end me, you know? And then the mist fucking clears and the U.S. military comes rolling up the highway, you know?
You can't have a more depressing friggin' ending than that.
Oh, my God. They were moments away from rescue. Moments.
If he had waited 5 more fucking minutes...
And he sees he sees the lady that left. He recognizes her with her kids in the truck that rolls by.
And you know the original idea for that was
it had the whole store people.
Everyone from the store.
So like, they left. The director couldn't do it. You know, they'd already taken off back for their homes and whatnot.
And honestly, I like this one better.
Yeah,
I like to think that maybe they didn't survive.
I don't want any of those people to survive. I hope they all died. But I like that she made it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, why? Why? You know, if I'd just gone with her in the first place, you know.
Yep. And they were trying to talk her out of leaving. And yeah.
And we just you know, from the beginning of the movie, you just write her off and say, well, she's gone.
Yep, she's dead. Not going to see her again. Boy, were we surprised.
Mm.
Now, let's talk about seeing her again. shall we?
Okay.
Let's talk about the fact that there are like 5 or 6 people in this movie that have shown up in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, yeah. That's not a coincidence.
Oh, no, it was the same director, I think. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he executive produced the first season of The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. So we have Jeffrey DeMunn, who was Dale, the RV guy, is in this. He actually makes it. He almost makes it to the end.
Okay. Gotcha.
Melissa McBride, who is famous as being Carol on The Walking Dead, badass that
That's
she
true.
Is. Laurie Holden, who plays Andrea on The Walking Dead, makes it to the end with, you know, well, the suicide scene, anyway. Juan Gabriel Parija played Morales, who I think was one of the people in the prison for that season of The Walking Dead. I don't think he lasted long, maybe 2 or 3 episodes. There's a guy named Sam Witwer, who was a nameless tank soldier in one of the earlier episodes. And then Tiffany Morgan is Aaron in The Walking Dead. So, yeah, a lot of people from... I'm watching this, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second here. I think it's just fitting that the character of Carol on The Walking Dead makes it to the end of the movie. Because that just fits. It really does.
Let's see, when did The Walking Dead... Okay, so Walking Dead started in 2010. Yeah, it's no surprise to me. He must have remembered, wow, I really like these actors. Let me see if I can hold them in on what I'm doing here.
Right, because it's not like that was a British production. And, you know, it's kind of like what happens with the cast members of Harry Potter. It's like, wow, we're seeing cast members from Harry Potter in every British film. Because England's a small place.
Yeah, of course they use the best talent they have on the island. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Oh,
boy. One aspect of the film that I found very, you know, interesting and well done was the fact that they found a real life location, this yeah. little, you know, old small town grocery store.
Well, of course, they changed the sign and stuff to not make it the actual store.
Well, I mean, but they did use an actual store. And I don't think it's part of I think they just used it as is. It's not like it was part of a chain or anything. It was a small town grocery store.
It was supposed to be portrayed as a real town. In fact, the highway marker.
Saw that.
I posted on Facebook. I also have it on my my newly posted review of The Mist at Cinema Unrest. I have a picture there comparing the actual highway sign and the one from the movie.
it's a very nice little detail point. There are a lot of people who will point out that, you know, like the power company trucks were the wrong colors for the where it was supposed to be taking place and such. There are a bunch of details that don't match up. Most
and
people
the school buses were from Kennebunk, Maine.
Yeah.
I saw that on the side of the school buses.
The thing that I really like is they found this real life, you know, location.
Right.
Where, you know, and they build a drugstore next to it, a drugstore facade. And then they recreate the entire grocery store and the drugstore in a studio, in an indoor studio, so they can do all the cool stuff with the mist and the monsters and everything,
and fire, and
they did things where they could rock the structure of the grocery store, you know, to make the ceiling lights wiggle and ceiling tiles fall down and everything.
Yep.
And they just matched this grocery store piece for piece. Everything was exactly as it was. And that was so freaking convincing. It was so good. It really looked like they just did all this stuff right there on location.
Oh yeah.
And I love stuff like that. Love it.
Let's talk about the special effects.
Okay. All the monsters are CGI.
Oh yeah, all the monsters are CGI.
But
very well done. A lot of this is very well done. The only
thing you know why the actors responded so well to these CGI characters is they went to the trouble of making, you know, puppet versions of all of them, saying, look, this is what the monster looks like. This is what it moves like.
Yep.
Be frightened. <You know? laughs> So I thought that was great. They went to the trouble of making all these, you know, nothing that ended up on film. But still, the characters knew what they were up against. They didn't have tennis balls on a pole, and that was it.
Right. But I really hope they didn't show the models to them until they were supposed to be attacked by them. It's like, all right, guys, in this scene, you're going to be attacked by this.
Yes. Yes.
So that would be awesome.
Watching the behind-the-scenes documentaries on the Blu-ray, seeing them like animate the tentacles. They actually went to the trouble of making the tentacles for the loading dock door scene. They actually animated them and everything, so they were all like, you know, articulate and could move and everything. They wanted to make these tentacles as convincing as possible, and they also wanted to make sure that when a tentacle wrapped around, you know, a character's leg or something, that the cloth interaction was happening there. And that's the problem with CGI a lot of the time. You have this awesome looking creature, but it's not actually, it doesn't look like it's actually affecting what it seems to be touching. It's just laid down on top of it. So that was great. They made these physical, you know, puppets and they made them move in such a way that the CGI artist had something to go off of.
Yep.
And had a lot of physical interaction with the characters. And holy shit, those tentacles were frightening.
Oh, yeah. And another thing with the tentacle scene is I love the interaction afterward. It's like, what the hell were those tentacles attached to?
I love we talked about this before. I love it when a character is completely disbelieved and then is shown astoundingly inarguably correct that they were telling the truth, and there's nothing anybody can say to dispute that. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of have several layers of that where it's like they bring in like the, you know, the knuckle draggers and the teenage bag boy in the back. And it's like, okay, where is this thing? You know, what's, when you hear a noise? Oh, let's raise the thing. And then the bag boy gets taken, and then they come back out, and then the grocery store manager doesn't freaking believe them. You know, it's like, what are you drinking beers now? Like, you're going on reports. You know?
Yeah.
And they're looking at him like, dude, we got bigger problems than that.
Yep.
Man, those tentacles. I what was the scariest monster for you? The tentacles are it for me.
Well,
the way they just split open and all these sucker teeth and just and just the way they just rip that boy apart. Ugh.
Yeah, that's pretty freaking intense. But all of them were actually all of them were pretty. I wouldn't want to face any of them, to be honest.
I think I could deal with the huge walker, because I don't think the huge walker from the end of the movie would bother with me.
Did you see the look on their faces as they're sitting there in the Jeep?
And they're just looking up through the windshield, going,
what the fuck is that?
That's, you know what? That would have been a great alternate title for this movie. What the fuck is that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, the bugs were pretty, because I can't stand getting stung. That is one of my biggest fears. And the bugs crashing through the glass, and then they stung that poor girl in the neck. I think the novella, I want to say that in the novella, the bug sting swells and then eventually erupts while she's in storage in the back loading dock.
Well, they did that with
a bunch of creatures. Yeah, they probably said, you know what, twice is probably too many times in the movie. But yeah, I think it happened with her in the novella. Don't swear me to that, though.
Maybe. They did something similar to that with Cloverfield.
Right, exactly that. Yeah, but they in the mist, though, they did it with the spiders thing, where if someone was, you know, attacked by the spiders, they would erupt with a bajillion baby spiders. Those were freaky. The way they had like skull teeth.
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
But you're right though. That would have been a great alternative title. What the fuck is that?
Oh man. Right. Oh. No. Here it is. What the fuck is that? Dash. And then it ends. It just cuts off that. That's the title of the movie. What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
You don't even have time enough to finish it.
Yeah. You know what I noticed?
What's that?
The huge praying mantis type thing that grabbed that guy that got banished from the store.
Gotcha, right.
Didn't he look a little bit like that thing that was in the arena in Attack of the Clones?
Maybe. I mean, if they're both based off of praying mantis, then
Attack of the Clones arena. So I think it was Attack of the Clones, wasn't it?
Well, while you're looking up that, I thought one interesting detail was that about the ending. A lot of people debated whether the ending is better or worse than the novella. Stephen King liked the ending for the movie so much. He says he wished he would have thought of it. And he would have used it had he thought of it. So that tells you how much he really approved. Oh, and another thing. Apparently, I don't know, I have any current news on this, but I found an article from September of last year that says that a TV series for The Mist was in development.
Really?
Yeah, through the Weinstein Company and Dimension Television. Moving on with King's breast blessing.
His breasting?
Breasting, brother. His blessing.
I would
and
like
it
to see that.
Doesn't say a whole lot else, but yeah, that is a thing. So I'm looking forward to that to see if that makes it to film. That would be fantastic to see. It would not be a retelling of the movie or the novella, but basically about other people in the same area
right.
going through the same thing and
I would watch that. I really
yeah.
would.
I would dig it. So what were you looking for?
Oh, I just linked you a photo.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, they're both based off the praying mantis, so. Yeah. I think the one in the mist was bulkier, you know, around the abdomen.
Yeah, I'm getting a picture of that to compare.
So, yeah.
Well, much larger, so, I'm sure.
Definitely, definitely, if you got a spare couple of bucks, get the, here it is. Get the same one that I got is the, if you go to the Mist on Amazon, get the 1359 multi-format one. And it says,
the 2-disc collector's edition.
Yeah. Yeah, that has everything. I don't know what the deal is with the 2248 Blu-ray copy. That is definitely worth adding to your collection. The black and white, one, it even has like an introduction an optional introduction that you can turn on from Frank Darabont, the director, and he'll tell you why he wanted to show it in black and white and the different feel and what kind of inspired that desire. And it really is a different movie watching experience. I highly recommend it. So how many stars? I would give this movie a solid 4 out of 5 stars.
Oh,
it's one of my favorites. Yeah. Yeah.
And I did that when I did my review at Cinema Unrest. 4 stars, baby.
Yeah. This one had very, very little that I could possibly, you know, question about it. The most hated character I loved because of how much I loved hating her.
Right. if you didn't care about the character at all, didn't affect you at all, not a good character. But this woman needed to die.
Yeah.
And you knew she needed to die. I mean, Liz and I were both, you know, at the end of the, like, give us the boy. She wants to sacrifice the boy, the 8-year-old. And that, Liz right and I are both like, shoot her, shoot her, shoot her. And boom, Ollie shoots her. Thank you, Ollie. Thank you. He gets killed in the parking lot a couple of minutes later, but thank you, Ollie.
let's see, what was that character's name? Mrs. Carmody, right? That's her name, right?
Die.
Mrs. Carmody is definitely the Dolores Umbridge of the Mist.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
Yes. Absolutely, but
can't spell it out any better than that.
But no one is more Dolores Umbridge than Dolores Umbridge.
Anyway, okay, so we love this movie. What are we watching next week, Jethel?
Next week, we take a look back at the 1992 horror Candyman. Get back out in the sunlight.
Great movie. Looking forward to the next one. And you know what? Popcorn's on me.
What? What's the catch? You never get the popcorn.
I have a coupon.
Let me see that.
Get one of my popcorn with purchase of movie ticket at regular price.
Alright then.
See? Totally covered.
Expires June 2008.
Huh. You think they'll notice?
Not even for this theater. This is a place across town that closed down years ago.
Well, it's the thought that counts, right?
You're a real bastard.